Honoring Hussein's enduring legacy at Cap UCLA. More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
This is Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface. I'm Susie Wiseman. Today, we look at a historic victory in New York politics, the election of the dynamic, talented, and charismatic Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani as mayor of New York City. It wasn't just a campaign, it was a movement. In the finance capital of the world, home to Wall Street, corporate landlords, and real estate developers, organized people won against organized money. Mamdani's 10-point victory was powered by years of base building in working class, immigrant, and marginalized communities. On-the-ground organizing, leadership from grassroots groups, and a strategy to expand the electorate, not simply target likely voters, changed what was politically possible. Today, we're joined by three of the organizations that helped make this victory real, along with New York City's DSA. Zohran himself is a longtime member, and who are now shaping what accountability and governance will look like. Our guests, Alina Shen, is the organizing director of CAAV Voice, the Coalition Against Anti-Asian Violence. Jagpreet Singh is the political director of Drumbeats. And Alice Nascimento is the political director of New York Communities for Change. And they'll be with us to reflect on the left's contestation for governing power in New York City when our program returns in just a moment. Welcome back to the program. I'm Susie Wiseman. Despite everything happening nationally under the Trump administration, it's been a very good week, plus, for New Yorkers and by extension, for the country. Mamdani's victory has rekindled hope and energized resistance beyond New York City. The campaign was very effective, and candidate Zohran Mamdani is a talented, charismatic, media-savvy communicator who remained laser-focused on affordability and committed to mobilizing non-voters and the marginalized. But he couldn't do it with his talents alone. There was an army of volunteers, organizations and individuals who ran the ground operation, and we now see the results. Our panel today, representing some of these organizations, is here to tell us what they did and what they plan to keep doing now that Mamdani will be in office. Hold his feet to the fire. This is what we think of as accountability, or become an essential part, even partners, in governance. There's a lot of areas to cover with our panelists, organizers from day one endorsing organizations, Cav Voice, Drumbeats, and New York Communities for Change, to reflect on the left's contestation for governing power in New York City. Let me introduce our panelists. Alina Shen, organizing director of Cav Voice, that's the Coalition Against Anti-Asian Violence. Jagpreet Singh, political director of Drumbeats, that's Desis Rising Up and Moving. Alice Nascimento is the political director of the New York Communities for Change. These organizations launched the People's Majority Alliance, uniting labor, tenants, immigrants, and socialists to take Mamdani across the finish line and to build governing power outside City Hall. And let's just get started. First, I guess I should say congratulations for your efforts. We're going to get for our listeners a real sense of what that did. It's been a long road to make Zohran's platform a reality, or at least just to get him across the finish line. So maybe we can just begin Tell us a little bit about how we got here. What was this long road to victory? What did it look like? And maybe we could even start by asking, where were we a year ago, let's say last October?
Yeah, I can definitely kick us off. This is Alina from CAV Voice. Well, just to quickly introduce myself, I'm the organizing director of CAV Voice in CAV. I have been a youth member of CAV years and years ago, and really joined CAV because rent control and union jobs were what kept my family of immigrants in this city and able to stay here. And so I just really want to quickly lay out the conditions in which our three organizations came together around this campaign for mayor. In October of 2024, we had just received the news that Mayor Eric Adams was facing an indictment and was starting to make public appeals for President Trump's pardon. We were also experiencing the month right before the presidential election, and immediately afterward had a reckoning in New York. I believe the headlines were all saying that New York was one of the states that was moving the farthest right, despite being a blue state. And so in the middle of all of this crisis of legitimacy of the political establishment and a vacuum of political leadership, working class organizations like ours had to step in. At CAV Voice, after the presidential election, we ran ear to the ground initiatives where we conducted conversations across hundreds of people with hundreds of people in our base to understand how to interpret the data that was coming out of that particular moment. And so we understood that our people were feeling disillusioned with politics and really betrayed by the political establishment. What we found was that as we were doing this organizing work, ear to the ground, having hundreds of conversations, centrists and liberals were chalking this up to a rightward shift based on individual values and scarcity. If we at the time, if our three organizations at the time listened to the headlines and the pundits, we would have abandoned our people and given up political leadership in this moment. Instead, we met our people where we were at and took a chance to endorse a Democratic Socialist candidate for office, Zoran Mamdani. And we understood that this was the only viable option in the particular context of October 2024. I'll stop there. I'm sure Jagpreet and Alisi have a lot to say on that particular moment too.
Thank you very much for doing that and setting the context, because one thing that we know, actually, you know, I'm outside of New York, but we've heard the message that this was a rigorous, long-time campaign and that Zoran himself had spent long time organizing South Asian immigrants, as well as, of course, his activity in DSA. And so really what you're talking about is the kind of base building, but also a strategy for your kind of organizing. And I want to hear other people on that issue. And especially, I'm glad that you put it into the context of the corruption of the Eric Adams mayoralty, because that is key. So what shifted, and go more deeply into these lessons that you learned from your ear to the ground. So let me ask Alisi to come in on that.
Thanks so much, Susie. And just to also introduce myself, my name is Alisi Nascimento. I'm the political director at New York Communities for Change. Some of you who might be able to go back in organizing will remember ACORN. That is kind of the quintessential and historic community organization that imploded in 2010 after it was targeted by the right wing, but that had organized over 500,000 people across the country, mostly Black and Brown, to fight on issues like housing rights, workers' rights, and economic justice. We arose from the ashes of ACORN to continue that work. A number of our members are still, we call them the OG ACORN members that still bring that fire and that power to their organizing. And so even when we contextualize it, we can go back to a year, but I think our organizations have been doing work on the ground and really building a foundation of trust and really of working alongside people in the community to improve their lives. So everything from organizing in buildings to get repairs, to going after slumlords, to passing historic housing rights legislation. I think without that foundation, we wouldn't have that trust in the communities that we do and wouldn't have been able to really be part of that essential infrastructure that Zoran managed to be part of and capitalize on and really be a partner in using for his campaign. So, yeah, so just want to kind of give that contextualization because we can look at a political moment. It could start a year from now or start after the primaries, but it really comes from many, 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 many years of hard work.
No, it's a great context because we're talking about what was leading up to before there was a candidate, the kind of organizing politically that had to go on. Jagpreet, maybe we could have you come in here and introduce yourself and tell our listeners what your organization was doing.
Thank you for the opportunity, Susie. Again, my name is Jagpreet Singh. I'm the political director of Drum Beats, sister organization to Drum. We've been around for a quarter of a century organizing working class South Asian Indo-Caribbean New Yorkers around a variety of issues. And yeah, I think the context here is very important. Our communities that we organize, the South Asian Indo-Caribbean communities, have been in New York City for a century and a half, if not more, have been the integral part of the fabric of this city. And yet haven't been elevated to the same status, haven't really been activated in the same way many of our other communities have. And we've seen this in our voter participation rates, where the average voter participation rate in New York City is about 20 to 25%, sometimes peaks at 30%. Our communities are usually around 10 to 15%. And a lot of that has to do with the type of outreach that's done to our communities, but also the alienation of our communities from the political process. You know, a lot of pundits often say that our communities are apathetic to the political process, but I often push back against that, that no, we are purposefully excluded from the political process because our community isn't seen as valuable. We often get very paltry methods of outreach every 4 years when people are running for office. They may come to our community centers, our religious institutions. They may take a photo with one or two leaders, say one or two words, and then we don't see them for 4 years. Right. The level of outreach we've seen other communities get isn't necessarily given to our communities. And because of that, we haven't seen many leaders come out in the electoral space within our communities. We haven't seen a robust level of investment within our communities. And even worse, our communities often get cracked when it comes time for redistricting. A very famous example of this is in South Queens, where my family is originally from, where we have a very robust Punjabi and Indo-Caribbean community that's been there for 30, 40 years. And yet, and they're very tight. They live within the same couple of blocks, within the same neighborhood. And yet in the assembly, they're cracked into four different districts. In city council, they're cracked into three different districts. In the state senate, they're cracked into two different districts. In Congress, they're cracked into three different districts. And we never see effort actually being done to make sure that our communities are kept whole, that our communities are outreached to, which led to the issues that we see. In 2024, we endorsed the Leave It Blank campaign for the presidential primary. And much of that was coming out from our membership who were disgusted with what's happening in Palestine. They were disgusted with the way that the Democrat Party that says they represent our communities responded to this. They were disgusted in the way our president was cracking down on protests around the country, peaceful protests, I might add, and wanted another option. We didn't see another option, which is why in some of our districts, we got up to 30% of people leaving the ballot blank when voting for a president, which then came into the general election a year ago, where many of our communities, unfortunately, stayed home and didn't vote, or they voted third party. And, you know, many instances might have voted Republican because they didn't see anything coming out from the Democrats that actually represented them, which really painted the moment for us in the summer of 2024 when Zoran had first approached our organizations. And we really saw back then that there was a moment. There was an opportunity here not to only activate our communities, but galvanize them, to bring them to the forefront of this fight.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I think that is the issue, that this is the moment. And The strategy that you began to outline, and I want to hear more about from each of you in terms of your organizations, was first you were going to support Zohran and endorse him, but then also the idea that you were going to expand the electorate from those who were, I guess, the non-voters, or those, as you said, who were just disillusioned and sat at home, or perhaps even those who may have gone for Trump. I want to hear more about how you reached out to those people. And I think it does represent a different sort of theory of, from the ground game that we normally see with door knocking. And I want to hear more about how each of you in your organizations did that.
I have two takeaways in response to that question. I think what community organizations of working class people made possible was expanding the electorate. I would say not even expanding it, but creating a new electorate and winning back people who would have been polled right because of deep disillusionment with the political establishment. And so that is what our work made possible in the beginning of this campaign. I just wanted to share two pieces. The first is that because we are a base building organization, all three of our organizations have decades of experience and a track record with our base of working class people and immigrants, where we're winning material improvements to people's lives. We're fighting for rent protections. We're fighting for dignified conditions of work and higher wages for workers. And so I think because our organizations have legitimacy in our communities, when we go to our communities and we say, we understand this election not as an election for this charismatic candidate, but actually as an opportunity for us to change the conditions under which we are organizing and demanding more for the next 4 years. They believe us because of our history and legitimacy in our communities. That also means that we, on the doors, on the phones, at the polls, we're talking to people about voting not for a charismatic candidate or because we like the candidate, but because this is part of our larger strategy in order to change the conditions in people's lives, but also in our city. And so a conversation on the door might be like, and I, you know, I'm sure everyone has had dozens, if not hundreds, of conversations like this on this call here. We talk to someone and they would say, I'm not voting. I don't believe in politicians. They always lie. They come here every 4 years and then I've never seen them again. And we say, sure, we also don't believe a politician's word at face value. But Zohran Mamdani has committed to, on day one, has committed to a 4-year rent freeze. And Cav Voice, a tenant union, has endorsed him. And so we're not asking for you to vote for Zohran Mamdani, the candidate. We're asking you to vote and join this organization, which is far more reliable than a political candidate, and join us in making sure that he is able to deliver what he's promised. And you can rely on an organization because you are building it and because you are part of an organization. And so that's actually a key takeaway from our ear to the ground experiment at Cav Voice. We learned that people were disillusioned with political establishment, but needed organization, needed to trust that they could be part of something that would make things different for their lives. And so we were really explicitly pro-organization in our approach. And we understood a candidate and a electoral fight as a tactical decision, as a tactical campaign, a tactical fight that would help advance organizing in New York City. I think that made a huge difference and won a lot of people over.
Alisa, your organization did a massive canvassing operation in communities, I understand, that were not so sympathetic to Democratic Socialist candidates. So I'd really like to hear about the conversations that your canvassers had and how they began to, you know, at least elicit people's ideas and begin to see if they would see things in a different light.
Yeah, those conversations are actually not very different from what Alina said. And I think across many doors and in many communities across the city, whether it's they're Black and Brown and Latino, which is where we organize, or South Asian or Chinese, the sentiment is surprisingly very similar, or unsurprisingly, we should say. And our strategy was a little bit different in the sense that we weren't necessarily bringing in large swath of new voters, but we were working on cracking the support for the establishment Democratic candidates that's so deeply ingrained, particularly in Black communities where we organize. So really digging into that Adams and Cuomo base that I think with the general you saw Zoran end up flipping in areas where we organize, like Brownsville, Canarsie, they're heavily African-American, and also in the Bronx that Zoran was able to flip. It's either there is apathy, like Alina was saying, in the form of disillusionment, or there is I'm voting for Cuomo, or I'm voting for Adams. I'm voting for the person I know who I've seen in my community over a span of many years. These are normally politicians, and particularly within Black communities, the organizing is very relational. They are not ideologically rigid. So there's not that I can't do democratic socialist, but it's more of who have I seen, who's giving me turkeys on Thanksgiving, who has backpack giveaways. There are ways that machine politics works in these communities and has worked for many years, and people trust that. It's what they know. So being able to break kind of through those cracks of actually challenging not just preconceived notions, but what people have known for a long time, and then asking if they believe that this is what they deserve, asking if when there's a leak in their ceiling and their landlord isn't fixing it, do they think that this is happening in Park Slope, right? Really kind of having those polarizing conversations and then shifting that to, like Alina said, an organization and what it means to be part of an organization is really, that's kind of what drives our theory of change. And then Zoran ends up being a vehicle for that, right? It's we are part of this movement and we are electing this person in order to deliver on our issues. But the issue is the star. Even though if you're reading mainstream media, you know, Zoran is a star. But for our members, what we need and in order to fight fascism, our people are on the front lines, right? If you can't feed your family, authoritarianism becomes much more appealing. And that's increasingly what we're seeing in many communities of color. But I think our lesson is that if you offer an affirmative vision of what is possible and what can be done as a collective when we organize, then people are bought in.
Yeah, for sure. And this is great that I get to build on my two wonderful comrades' contributions here as well. Outreach to quote-unquote ethnic communities in New York City hasn't really changed at all in the last 100 years since the times of Tammany Hall. The formula for the establishment is still the same. It's find loyal community leader, stooge-type person who you can give some sort of patronage-type position like district leader or something along those lines to, and then you rely on that person to turn out votes. This isn't effective, right? The patronage type system can only turn out so many votes in just the direct inner circle of that person that's being outreached to. We, in this race and in races previous, we've been experimenting with upending the system in what we call a pincer move. So as we endorsed back in October right away, thankfully, when Zoran had a lot more time when he was polling lower, we were able to take him to multiple community centers, to masjids, to gurdwaras, to temples, to street fairs. And if he wasn't able to go, our members were there talking to people on the ground, talking to community members about the affordability agenda, about freezing the rent, about affordable childcare, how expensive things are getting, how expensive groceries are getting, and how we finally have somebody who's uplifting our concerns, not just platitudes, not just blank messages that really don't mean anything. And with that work that we did early on, we were able to get a good number of community members on board. We were able to spread the word. You know, Zoran's social media strategy also had helped with that. But the fact that the campaign was able to also work with us in putting out in language material, we're able to put out flyers and lit that was in various of our languages, also helped make sure that we were spreading the word amongst the population in a very grassroots way. So this way, when we went to those same community leaders that often side with the establishment in February or March, they had no choice. Their children, their congregations, their employees, their community members were already excited about Zoran, were already excited about the possibility of this sort of person within the race, and they had no choice to come back on. So this way, when Cuomo had entered the race in March, it was too late. He couldn't go to those committee members, and those committee members couldn't support him without facing significant backlash. And again, the ones that tried did end up facing backlash, which proved to our point that upending the system and kind of turning it around and figuring out new ways to outreach to our communities and reaching out to, again, the most vulnerable layer of our working class communities is what helped propel this campaign to the point and the message that it is. In a lot of our religious
I just want to ask one question within that, because you're talking about the younger generation convincing the older generation. And I'm really curious about, you know, how that worked out. Is there a generational difference and, you know, and how effective was the social media campaign and even like, say, the rapping of Zoran effective in making these people more enthusiastic and turning them into not just supporters, but actually organizers as well?
For sure. I think one of the biggest reasons the younger generations were on board is just because of the way our younger generations consume media information, are a lot more online, have a lot more access to information. Whereas I don't want to say that our older generations are necessarily anti these policies or pro-establishment. It's just that their consumption of media is through different channels than our younger generations. A lot in our community, the most amount of news our community members get is through WhatsApp. It's through these sort of Facebook and Instagram journalists that put out information, which also was very helpful when we helped identify what those mediums were and then make sure that we were spreading our message on WhatsApp. We were talking to these community journalists. We were going to the rinky-dinky newspaper that's been around for like 30 years, but only this one subsect of the community reads it. So yes, even at the poll sites, both during the primary day and during general election days, I witnessed myself young people dragging their parents to the polls, saying that parents telling us that our kid called us from school in California and told us, if you don't vote for Zoran, I'm not coming home for winter break. So we definitely had a lot of activation from our younger generations to our older generations, but also our older generations, our community members overall, we saw enthusiastic support. I think the one of the exit polls that came out said about in the general election, 92% of Muslim communities and 80+% of South Asian communities ended up voting for Zoran because of the way the message was able to be spread and because of this type of pincer move, which I also want to give the campaign credit for, because they also had hired a Muslim South Asian field director to specifically target Muslim and South Asian communities, as well as a Muslim and South Asian political director to make sure that they were reaching out to some of these community institutions and leaders and building relationships with them, which are for sure going to go over into the administration as well.
Brilliant. So, yeah, Alina, I wanted to ask you too what it looked like in your community, because I understand that you were also using tenant leaders, tenant organizers in Queens and Chinatown. And I think I read that many of these people weren't just voters, but became spokespeople for the campaign. Can you talk a little bit about what your organization was doing there?
For sure. I did want to just tack on something to the really great points Jagpreet was making about intergenerational support for Zoran. So CAV Voice organizes working class Chinese and Bengali immigrants into neighborhood-based tenant unions in New York City. Our base is intergenerational. We have members from 14 years old all the way up to 96 years old. And actually what we found was our young people for sure were consuming different kinds of media, but they and their peers were also really responsive to this message of rebuilding the city around hope. And a vision rather than reacting to fear mongering from the far right. And so, and shrinking ourselves. And so I think in terms of the organizing campaign, that message really spoke to young people. And then I think for our older folks, they were grounded by different things. They were understanding this candidate as committing to 4-year rent freeze, fast and free buses, free childcare, and that was going to materially change their lives. And even if the hope and the vision piece didn't resonate with them, the other pieces certainly did and were things that we have been organizing around for quite some time. But yes, to your question, I think I would say that our membership and member leaders across our three organizations, but I'll speak for CAV Voice, we are made up of the lowest layers of the working class, and they experience the intense impacts of finance capital in New York City. And this comes down on their wages, on their living conditions. I'll just give an example. a portion of our membership are elders on fixed income living in rent-stabilized apartments. And we are seeing cuts to SNAP. And so for an elder on fixed income, for a tenant on fixed income, paying sometimes up to 100% of their income on rent, and then having SNAP cut, a rent freeze is truly the bare minimum of what it will require to survive. And so for our leaders, I think it was really important that we were really focused on changing the conditions of our fight. I think that's the thing. Like, we were going to have to face Trump's policies and crises no matter what. But by treating this mayoral election as a tactical fight, as an organizing campaign, we were able to change the conditions in which we will fight against all of these crises that are coming our way. And so, yes, many of our member leaders became spokespeople, some of them for the first time. They were just very clear about the kind of movement, outside movement that's needed to pair with the inside campaigns that will need to happen in order to truly deliver on Zoran's policy platform in this next period. And I think we were really pushed to play roles in this campaign in both the Bengali and Chinese community as spokespeople, as organizers, as strategists, also because of our experience. Just, I'm sure this is true for everyone here, we were stuck in these cyclical fights, to say nothing about the federal administration. We were fighting cyclical fights and we were responding to crisis. For example, the Rent Guidelines Board fight that would determine the outcome of rents for 2.4 million rent-stabilized tenants across New York City. That board, the Rent Guidelines Board, would meet every single year and determine whether rents go up. More often than not, they'll go up for rent-stabilized tenants, but theoretically, they could also go down or stay the same as they did during the de Blasio administration. And so every year, our members, CAV members, were leading this fight to make sure that the rent doesn't go up. They'd be giving testimony, they'd be protesting, they'd be holding rallies, press conferences. And honestly, those kind of cyclical fights drain our energy. And that is not the terrain that we want to be fighting. And so the experience of cyclical fights like that one really pushed our leaders in particular to truly align on the strategy of the moment and whatever the strategy required, which was in some cases becoming spokespeople in many dialects: Bangla, Mandarin, Cantonese, Fujianese, Toisanese, English, of course, and understood that role as part of our larger strategy to get out of these cyclical fights.
I'm really glad you said all of that. And I think we should sort of move now, like, from the victory to what's going to happen next in governing, because it's really important. And you've raised the issues. It seems like, you know, affordability was the mantra. And you have all been involved in tenant organizing. For our listeners here, the fact that there is something like 2 million people living in rent-stabilized apartments, is that would just be amazing here in Los Angeles. You know, there's already been threatened retaliation from developers and, you know, for a capital strike, for threatening to hike up rents anyway. So, you know, I know you've anticipated, but now how do you turn those movements into, let's call it, accountability, and how you see your organizations doing that?
Susie, this is the hardest part.
I know.
I really do feel like the real work starts on January 1st when he's sworn in. And the three of us, alongside a number of our partners, both in labor and other organizations who also supported Zoran, we launched a new coalition called the People's Majority Alliance right before the general election, actually. And it's meant to serve exactly as you said. You know, it's a space of, I'm wary of using the term co-governance. Some of us like to use mass governance, which means that we're normally, when you think about, at least within our spaces, you think about co-governance, and it's the leaders of organizations sitting around a table and talking to members of the administration and saying, here, these are some of the priorities, this is what you need. And we've found that that hasn't really bore fruit and it hasn't been as effective because at the end of the day, people have a different set of interests and we need the entire population to be invested, right? So all the people who voted for Zoran, we are equally just committed to making sure that he's successful. So it's really about a much more democratic vision of governance. And NYCC, we're part of so many fights, and I know so Drummond Cav, and we're on the outside and we're protesting. We're normally trying to stop a lot of bad things. I think one of Zoran's closest people said this. We're so used to fighting the establishment. What happens when you become the establishment? And I think that that's more for, you know, in terms of the administration and also how are we positioning ourselves as partners, but also as a space for accountability. And it feels to me, I don't know how Jagpreet and Alina feels, it's all a big experiment at this point, understanding how the different levers of government work. What kind of outside power and forces do we need in order to make things happen and put political pressure on the people who are trying to stop our agenda from happening? It's very messy and exciting. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's also full of different political calculations we're going to have to make, which the administration is going to have to face in terms of where they put political capital and where they don't, and where we want them to put political capital and where we don't. Just our membership is very centered and very grounded on the fact that, again, like I said, Zoran is a vehicle for improving our lives and bettering our political conditions. But the only way to do that and to make sure that he is accountable to us and that the forces of real estate, of Wall Street, of the billionaires, like we like to say, don't win. The only way we do that is if we really build our base and scale and our power so that people power wins at the end of the day in kind of the hub of capitalism.
That's really good. Jagpreet, I want to hear from you as well, because and I agree. I think co-governance is probably not the best phrase. I wasn't part of any of those discussions. I'm just saying that from hearing it now. I like to say, well, what does accountability mean? What is holding our politicians' feet to the fire? You have in this instance, you have a very sympathetic candidate who comes, you know, from an organizing background, but he's still going to face terrible problems or challenges, let's say, you know, who's going to set the priorities, the mayor or the movement? How do we avoid becoming outsourced organizers for City Hall? I'm going to let you answer some of them, Jagpreet.
Well, if I had the answers to these questions, I think we'd solve a lot of problems right now, but unfortunately I don't. I think this is like a muscle like any other, and this is just something that we have to work on. And thankfully, we aren't just sitting on our hands and waiting for January 1st to come on by to decide what is it that we're going to do next. We are actively having conversations. We've had conversations with folks in Vienna and in Spain who've launched these sorts of models before, where they take input from your everyday people in order to help decide how government operations are run. We've talked to the folks out in Jackson, Mississippi, who do the People's Assemblies out there, to, again, garner input, to talk about what are the changes that are happening and make sure that the community is involved in the process. We even talked to some of the folks around Brennan Johnson's circle within the teachers union and others who helped prop up his campaign and did a lot of the similar work, you know, that we were doing, just to see what were some of the challenges. Where did things work? Where did things not work? I think the most important thing that we can do as leftists is always be critical and learn and grow from there. And that's what we're trying to do in this point. You know, none of this is going to be perfect. I can say that from the get-go. We are going to have to stumble. We're going to have to learn. But hopefully within that stumbling, within the mistakes that we may make, we're continuing to improve our relationship, improve how we're continuing our work and holding both the administration accountable, but ourselves accountable to our membership, to the community at large as well. Our goal is to make sure that, you know, we activated a large portion of voters of community who are even not voters, who are now interested in the political process. And if we keep them engaged, if we keep them on board, that just makes our work easier in not only holding the administration accountable, but also passing and making sure that we're working together to pass all of the platform planks to make sure that we get the rent freeze for 4 years, to make sure that we pass universal child care, to make sure that we pass fast and free buses. You know, I think within this work is going to continue politicizing and activating new community members, which just is going to make it even easier. What we're not looking to do is have purity tests or draw really hard lines right now. I think we're trying to experiment, figure out what are the edges, what are our boundaries, what are we looking to get out of this, how long are we looking to do this in, and work in a collaborative sense so it's not a surprise in what's going to happen in the next 4 years, but it's something that we're actively building towards.
Great. Alina, I bet you have a lot to say about that. You know, accountability, also just translating some of these great campaign issues that Jagpreet just mentioned into policy or into a reality, because it's good, every one of them is difficult. Maybe we should set out, is New York City, you know, unique? You know, it's a city that has high rates of unionization. It's kind of inclined towards social democratic politics. It's not a car city. It's a city where everybody uses public transport and walks a lot. You know, it makes New York unique in that respect. But having free public transit, that's not an outrageous demand. I remember when I was living in Britain, they had this discussion in London about it would actually be cheaper to have the tube be free. But then, you know, the population said, but yeah, but there's so many tourists here. And then the working class of London will be paying for the tourists. And there wasn't enough pushback because that's actually a kind of chauvinist sort of reaction. But these are issues that probably, you know, will be coming up in New York too. So I want to hear from you and from your organizing, beginning at Lena, on some of these issues and how to make these platform promises or ideas into something that really will work.
Definitely. I think anyone who has ever passed policy to try to improve people's lives knows that passing policy is only one part of the battle. It's actually enforcement, making sure that the enforcement is actually happening across all different class backgrounds and neighborhoods and languages. Truly, we are not expecting to rely primarily on this tool that we have won, which is the affordability platform. We need a strong organized force on the outside that is making sure that these policies are setting us up for the best possible enforcement of these policies and ability to hold onto the parts of the platform for many terms after. Zoran, I just really want to share something that I think we've all been observing in the housing sector in New York City, which is that we won a 4-year citywide rent freeze for 2.4 million tenants in New York City. And almost immediately after the primary, the real estate industry went on the offense. I'm sure they've been doing it for much longer, but it just became much more clear. We saw that as we were close to victory in New York City, the real estate lobbyists were going to Albany and fighting to roll back rent protections. So we were fighting at the city level, then they went to the state. This is just an example of the ways that we are actually needing to anticipate some of the ways that our opposition, and the real estate industry has been our opposition for many, many campaigns, even before this one, how they are adapting to this moment. And they're shoring up their allies and adapting to this new terrain as almost at the same rate as we are. And so there's the real estate industry getting ready for next year. And then we are also getting ready for, there's been a lot of talk about federal retaliation and escalation.
That was going to be my next question.
And seeing it across the country, we're preparing for even like a military response as well as the more structural crisis around SNAP, SSI. And so I just really want to say that even before Zoran was polling well in this year, there was almost certain federal retaliation against our people. And so, like, again, we have changed the conditions under which we are able to respond to federal retaliation in New York City. And I think in the course of the last year, we've been able to reshape and organize the social movement left and community forces in New York City to the point where we have built enough of a movement that we can respond to these crises while continuing to build around the vision for our city and not around the fear that would cause us to shrink or become isolated. And so I just think, yeah, I want to bring it back to that point. And you know, on a practical level, actually, I think across the movement ecosystem, it's important for us to be really clear about what our roles are in the case of any kind of retaliation. As base building organizations, we're very positioned to provide emergency preparedness plans for working class members that otherwise might not be reached out to. We're able to have a sharp political analysis of the moment based on the experiences of our membership. We're able to maybe have a communications infrastructure for our neighborhoods. But actually, there are roles for unions, for activist networks, for a city administration that is hoping to protect its people. And so I think that is how we are approaching this next period, as understanding our role within this larger ecosystem, because that is going to be how we can survive with as many of our people safe as possible.
Thank you for that. I think that you raised the key issue, because you can be sure that Trump is going to retaliate in some way against New York. Here in Los Angeles, we had the experience of the Marines coming in, the National Guard against the governor's wishes, and then you saw an incredible response on the ground. And I think we should take credit for kicking them out, because what you saw were people mobilized at every instance of ICE going to Home Depots, trying to approach schools, especially hitting the car wash places, 57 of them, sometimes repeatedly, where they didn't just arrest the workers, but also the customers, also people getting off the buses on the corner where the car wash was, shutting down small businesses that are, you know, normally the backbone of the Republican Party, and turning everybody against this issue. And now we also see in Chicago, where they gave free whistles to everybody and you have a beautiful community response. I should also say, because it speaks to what you've just said, Alina, that, you know, here in LA, people organized mutual aid and made sure that they took food to families where workers were afraid to leave the house and make sure that kids got to school and things like that, you know, that are possible to do. So I want to turn it to you, Alisa, and ask, I guess, not so much the preparation, but what your communities are doing and how you see this coming up. And that's not even just the retaliation from landlords and developers, but from the national government in the context of our political climate now.
Yeah, there are so many contradictions in the time that we're living in, right? And I think you can choose to look at what's happening in the U.S. and see that there's a lot of darkness and cruelty, particularly coming from this administration. And at the same time, you know, there's that great quote telling us to look for the helpers in any situation, right? And what has been incredible, and I think this is also a testament to New York and to its spirit and to the people that it attracts and to a lot of immigrant communities, really. In Brazil, I'm Brazilian. In Brazil, we have an expression where we say tamo junto, which means we're in this together. And that's really what we've seen from our membership who, and, you know, in NYCC, and I think anybody who organizes working class folks across cultures and races, there's always some tension there over, you know, this person is getting more than me. And there was a lot of tension that we had to work through with our Black members and Latino members and then incoming immigrants. And when I came here, I didn't have anything. And now why are they giving money to these people? But I have to say that in this time, and obviously through also a lot of political education and deep organizing and conversations, it's really brought our people together. And one of the things that Zoran said when he spoke is, you know, to Donald Trump, if you come for one of us, you're going to have to get through all of us. Mm. When you're on the ground, that's what you see, right? Interestingly, COVID really prepared us for this moment because people don't have a safety net. Many of them, particularly the ones who are undocumented, they're not eligible for unemployment assistance, right, from the government. So our people didn't have food, they weren't able to work, they couldn't pay rent. So we often relied on mutual aid support networks that were deployed in neighborhoods and that we had also spearheaded, even though NYCC, we don't really do the kind of service work. We're mostly, you know, like we're organizing towards improving structural conditions. That means we do primarily legislative work, even though we're also doing the bread and butter kind of community organizing as well. But tapping into that infrastructure that we had built during COVID, where people couldn't go outside and they had to stay in their homes. And a lot of our folks, they're scared if we're talking about a potential deployment, I guess not if, but when people aren't going to want to go outside. And that makes it more difficult for us in terms of the work that we do when we knock on doors, because a lot of people are scared of opening their doors, right? Even we're organizing Know Your Rights workshops and people don't want to show up in person because there's a lot of fear, understandably so. But yeah, but that type of infrastructure has been built, and that's what we're, you know, rebuilding and tapping into, and community organizing networks and neighbors looking out for neighbors. I have to say, it's been really inspiring and amazing to see. I don't know if you guys have had the same experience, Jagpreet and Alina, but there's a lot of fear, but at the same time, there's that grit of we have each other's backs through this.
Jagpreet, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think 100% agree with Alisi and my colleagues here. The conditions are changing, especially for our communities, and we are more interconnected than ever before. And, you know, I think moving forward, I'm glad that we are no longer living or no longer will be living under Eric Adams' New York, where he allowed ICE to operate out of Rikers, where he was kicking many of our new immigrant communities out to the streets from shelters, putting them in even more danger, where defunding and bringing an austerity budget, which continued to impact our communities negatively. And we get to work under a new reality. And I think under this new reality, we're going to have to work together to learn how are we able to push? What are the pushes we're able to make? What are the ways that we're able to organize together? I think we're looking at places like you all in LA and seeing what is the work that y'all have been able to do there? How have organizations, both who do traditional organizing on top of mutual aid, on top of more autonomous organizing and assembly building, are all able to come together in this moment? You know, I think we have a long-running stereotype within the left of we love our infighting, but to see how we're able to come together in this moment and push back against fascist policies which are coming out of DC. We're continuing to work on that in New York City. All three of our organizations are involved in various efforts to ensure that if and when the crackdown comes, we're ready for it. But at the end of the day, we can do all the planning we want to do. We can do all the organizing. We can be ready, but we're not going to know what to expect. So because of that, it's good that we have an administration in place who is going to work alongside us rather than be a hindrance. And then also us making sure that we're keeping the administration accountable to that.
Right. Well, thank you. And we're all going to be looking at you as well. You know, you guys are going to be, you know, inspiration. Let's do a quick final round because we're running out of time. Maybe I could ask each of you to reflect on what you think success will look like 6 months or a year from now. And I know that that's very speculative, but you've been organizing and I think you know what pressure campaigns you're going to be stressing in the next period. So if you don't mind, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that one. So let's begin with Alina Shin.
Yes. So I think that for us, this next period is about getting into position. We are building out the movement, social movement left ecosystem through the People's Majority Alliance in order to build out this project that we've worked really hard to win. We're also doing emergency preparedness, at least at the scale of in one organization at a time. I'm sure there's more ahead. In the new year, I think we are going to be focused on how we can win the policy planks that Zoran had committed to delivering at the beginning of his campaign: freeze the rent, fast and free buses, free childcare. Actually, these conversations are going to need to happen at the same time as conversations about some of the ways that our city will need to be on the defense. I think we would love to focus only on building our city, but actually there is a lot to be planned around defense work as well, around retaliation, crises, both acute and structural. And so our fight this past year has been about organized people against organized money. And I think the spirit and the principles of that fight we are going to carry with us as we're approaching this new challenge of governing. And I think it's significant that in 2024, all of the day one endorsers were organizations of the lowest layers of the working class. And I believe that these will continue to be leaders in this fight and in this new challenge, this new muscle, as Jagpreet was saying, around how we are going to be able to wield this tool that we have now been able to access in order to change the conditions of organizing a better city and a better world for people.
Really well put, Alisi. How do you see success in the next period?
I'm about to have a kid, so I want universal childcare.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That is my self-interested, but you know, in every really other country in the world seems to be basic. But we do organize, NYCC, we've organized daycare providers for many, many years. Many of them have gone out of business. They are forced into essentially starvation wages, while at the same time, parents also can't afford childcare. So the system is deeply broken. And we're working with alongside the administration to make sure that we're able to deliver that. What a success. I mean, Alina, I thought you would say rent freeze, but maybe that's too, you know what I mean? That's like a...
I thought I did say a rent freeze.
No, I know, but I, yeah, anyway.
Universal child care is a giant one. That would be such a huge success and a big motor.
But 6 months, I feel like that's putting a lot of pressure, you know? And many people have tried to do this. I know de Blasio got it done in his first year, and we're hoping that Zoran will be able to do something similar. But it's in the kind of bigger scheme of things, I am hoping that people believe in politics and organizing again. And I think the only way that that will happen is if he is able to, not just him, like we are all, because we are partners in this, able to create and build the conditions so that we can deliver on these proposals that really would drastically improve our people's lives, every New Yorker's lives, really.
Jagpreet, how do you see it?
Hopefully, if things stay course within the next 7 months, we should know and have passed a city budget as well as a state budget, which in many ways is the core of how our governments operate. And hopefully within that, we have, you know, we're getting rid of the austerity budget that Adams has been pushing. We're funding our libraries and our schools. We're getting rid of some of the bloat, pork, and corruption that exists within our budget. It has for decades within the city budget. And on the state side, we're able to make the pushes because of the power that we all have been able to build to pass a more equitable budget, to get funding for fast and free buses, to start getting funding for universal child care, to start getting funding for some of the big campaign planks. And we're taxing the rich. We're making sure that we're increasing some of those, our revenue, in ways that really impact our working class communities. And that continues for the next 4 to 8 years while Zoran is in office, and keeps continuing. Because hopefully with all of this, we'll be able to show that the way we govern, the way leftists and socialists govern, is successful, is impactful to our communities, and lifts all of us up.
I can't thank you enough, all of you, for the work that you've been doing. There are lots of challenges that lay ahead that we haven't even addressed, like the police and other sorts of things. But I think what you did is lay out a very good notion of how you got to where we are today and how Zoran was able to energize a lot of the communities, and that you're, but it was based on the long-term organizing that all of you have done. And thanks so much for joining us on the program today. And I wish you every bit of luck, and to tell you that the whole world is watching and we're rooting for your success. And that's our show for today. I'd like to thank my guests, Alina Shen of Cav Voice, Jagpreet Singh of Drumbeats, and Alisi Nascimento of New York Communities for Change. Thanks to executive producer Robert Brenner, producer-director Melissa Figueroa, editor-engineer Juliana Gota, Aussie Flamenco in Master Control. You can listen to this and other archive shows at kpfk.org. Just click Audio Archives and scroll down to Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. You can also listen to an extended version of this program on Jacobin Radio, available wherever you listen to your podcast. And you've been listening to Beneath the Surface on KPFK, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond, streaming live and archived at kpfk.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support. Stay tuned now for Ian Masters and Background Briefing. I'm Susie Wiseman.
Coming up this week on LA Theater Works.
Nora and Torvald Helmer are a middle-class couple whose happy marriage hinges on a secret.
When your husband was sick, you came to me for a loan of 4,800 crowns.
Where else could I go?
If I get shoved down a second time, you're going to keep me company.
A Dollhouse by Henrik Ibsen.